This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is Colosso Soprano.
Go!
The premier destination for soccer talk with Emmy Award-winning play-by-play man Dan Dibley.
Squirt!
And international soccer savant Rick Tittle.
Work it, work it.
Let's kick it off.
Back again, another edition of Golazo Supremo, Golazo! Asso, asso, asso!
Dibs, it's episode 5. And you know what they always say, anybody could do 4 podcasts, but when you get to 5, it's for reals.
Yeah, we're officially a fixture now in the podcast sphere, so to speak.
Watch out, Mark Maron.
Yeah? Mark Maron? What?
He is the number one comedy podcast.
Oh, now. I must have missed that one.
Okay,
must have gone right past.
I was trying to think off the cuff of a good podcast reference. What would be yours? Who has a famous podcast?
Probably Adam Carolla.
Okay.
Or, You know, I don't catch a lot of podcasts.
Yeah.
To be honest, maybe we'll have to do a take 2 on this whole open.
let's start over.
No, we vowed never to start over.
Oh, that's
over,
right.
Nick.
We vowed
to,
by the
do
way,
it
Adam Carolla, I had him on my show years ago, and we're the exact same age. We're both from California, and all we did was basically have just a bro love fest because we agreed with everything the other guy was saying.
That's always good.
So good guest if you ever get him.
I'll try to book him for my next podcast.
Let's do it.
Golazo Supremo, it is episode 5, and we are getting ramped up because coming up here, before we talk again, will be Champions League knockout stage, match day number 1. Rick, how excited are you?
I'm very, very excited because my team is involved, and they haven't been in my life just a couple of times. And so, Borussia Dortmund, and we'll break it down as we go, but to answer you, I'm very excited, Dan.
And it's Tottenham going up against Borussia Dortmund. And that's just one of 4 matchups as we get underway. What do you think of the format for the round of 16 with the home and home, with the two-legged action? Is that appropriate at all stages, or does it just work best here for the first 2 rounds?
Well, you know they do it in what they used to call the mini league when you get your 6 games. And that's just a way to make sure that everybody makes their money so you're not knocked out by Trondheim like Blackburn was when
Ouch.
They won the Premier League. Yeah,
old Trondheim.
I should say Premier League. But it's it's fine. I think you should, everybody should get. And let me just ask you this, just as a sports fan, as an aside, I've never understood the term home and home. I mean, I know what it means. We play at your place, you play at mine. But why isn't it home and away? We're going to play at home and then we're going to play away. It's like we're changing cases. It's like, who's coming with us to the game? Dad and dad. And you're like, no, that's my dad. I don't know. It just seems weird, home and home, don't you think?
It doesn't really strike me as weird, home and home, just because we get to play at home and then you get to play at home. And ultimately, every match contains one team that's away, unless it's a neutral. So if it's home and away, you're talking about we're home and then you're away, and then you're home and then we're away.
I get it. But it's like if you have 2 home games in a row, I'd say we're home and home.
That would be if I had 2 home games in a row.
That's all right, but if you're the guy talking, you know what? Let's move on to soccer.
Home and home, it's the format for the knockout stages. What do you think at that point? Is it appropriate?
Yeah.
Would you rather have single elimination
with
the higher seeded team getting the home game?
No, it's to me, I think it's not fair. Soccer, your home field advantage can be so tremendous, and you go in there and the curve is sued or a cop, and you've got ultras, and it's too hard. You deserve to have now, of course, the finals in a neutral venue. It'll be in Madrid this year, I believe. I think that's appropriate, Dan.
You got the 12th is when the action begins. Up first, you've got 2 games, and of course, Tottenham playing the next day. Roma and Porto. Any feeling on this one other than the winner will most likely be victimized in the next round anyway?
Yeah, well, you know, you think about Roma, this is everything for them. Porto, it still takes me back to when Jose Mourinho came out of nowhere to win the Champions League with Porto, which is a great, great soccer club. It's not the Benfica. Benfica is the Yankees of Portugal, obviously. But Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think either of those teams is going to make its way to the final.
The other one, Manchester United going up against PSG, and this one on paper looks to be an unbelievable tilt between two powers in their own league. But when you look deeper, you see a Manchester United team that has looked very promising, but a PSG team in turmoil with the Neymar injury and other problems.
I think it's amazing that these teams have never played each other before. And so we're finally going to get that. And people will say, oh, it's, you know, Solskjaer's first game in the Champions League. Well, first game in the knockout stages. People might know that he was the head coach at Molde. Of course, he was part of that great Molde team. He scored 31 goals in 1996, and that's when Alex Ferguson brought him to Old Trafford. So he's been in the Champions League, not at this stage. But I still think that Paris Saint-Germain finds their way past Man United in this two-leg fixture.
Is it too much experience, or would you say too much overall quality? Because I like what Manchester United's done, instilling Rashford more frequently, and with Lingard, he's been so dangerous. Anthony Martial, the young trio up top, and then you've got Lukaku if you need him late. They've seemed to be so much more dangerous since the manager switch.
The honeymoon is still going on, and that's why people, I mean, Wayne Rooney piping in today saying, oh, I love Gunner, but I want Pochettino to be the manager of Man United. I'm like, hey, Wayne, why don't you shut up?
Yeah, keep your hands off my man, you know?
It's like the Yankees. Yeah, we'll take Eric Chavez. I mean, it's just like, you know, that's the way they kind of feel. But I just think it's a pedigree thing. Now, the only thing is, outside of talent, is that you can never count out the English side. It's that mustn't grumble, bulldog spirit. Like we saw in Istanbul, 3-0 at halftime, Milan over Liverpool, and Milan loses.
Oh, it's a heartbreaker.
One of the greatest games I've ever seen where I didn't have a dog in the fight.
We'll get into Liverpool and Man City in the race for the Premier League title coming up. But first, as we trick our way through the Champions League day two, you've got the big one, Tottenham hosting Dortmund, Borussia Dortmund. Give me a scouting report on Dortmund, because we know about Tottenham. Harry Kane still not fit to be back. Dele Alli still out. But Yunmin Son, since he's returned, has kind of picked up where he left off. And Tottenham's still dangerous. They haven't fallen off and fallen out of the Premier League race, even though they've had these issues. What do you make of Dortmund, particularly in this first leg, in a game, I guess, that will be played at Wembley?
Well, Tottenham have never won a home game in the Champions League knockout stages. So they said they're still new to this competition just a few times lately.
Would this count, by the way, if they won at Wembley as a, quote, home victory, even though their ground is still yet to be constructed?
It's their home stadium for 2 years. So, yeah, it's a home game in front of their home fans. It's in London, not North London. It's in northwest London, mostly West London.
I'll take your word for it.
But
I left my compass at home.
But the thing is, to me, I mean, these two teams didn't really have a history until 2 years ago. And you think about 2 years ago, Dortmund being the team that knocked Tottenham out of the Europa League. In fact, Sonny from the Bundesliga before, he was the only guy to score. And then last year, in the group stages, Tottenham put Borussia Dortmund to the sword twice. So I'm actually liking this, even though, you know, Tottenham has their share of injury problems, but I think they'll probably play Sonny and Lucas Moura up front. And there's been rumors out there. In fact, Danny Freisinger, who is a Tottenham fan into his third year now, I think, he just said, when's Harry coming back? And I said, he says he might come back for Dortmund. So we'll see, Dan.
That's 5 days from now. I don't think that's very likely. But
yeah,
especially with the Premier League still up for grabs, mm-hmm. and Tottenham still may have a say in that. And we'll get into their road. There's an interesting piece on ESPN about the six matches to watch throughout the course of the remainder of the Premier League schedule. The final match before we'll break down the other ones next week here on Golazo Supremo, Ajax, the Dutch team, making a return to the Champions League knockout stages against Real Madrid. Is this too tough a task for the Dutch?
I think so. And the funny thing is about Ajax, too, is that, I mean, you talk about La Masia at Barcelona. There's nothing like the Ajax school. I mean, you can just look at Tottenham right now. Christian Eriksen, Toby Alderweireld, Jan Vertonghen, Davinson Sanchez. Ajax, I mean, John O'Brien from America. Ajax puts those. One time I got to sit down with Ruud Gullit for an hour. You talk about having a great time interviewing somebody. He's one of those guys that was not an Ajax guy. But I love the fact that they have such a great school, But they were more of a selling team. I remember being in Europe in 96 when they opened the Amsterdam Arena, and I thought that would be the phase where Ajax was kind of going to step up and get back to their former pedigree. The thing I loved about the Amsterdam Stadium, by the way, is they have a waterless moat to keep fans off the field.
It's a dry moat.
So if you try to jump in, you dive down 10 feet into cement, and then you're just standing down there. That's kind of ingenious, humane way. It's better than like concertina wire.
Especially if you can then flood the moat and make the person who's in there basically fight for their life.
Yes. And I think Liverpool, Bayern Munich, I mean, that one is a really mouthwatering affair as well. If you talk about two teams, both with five European Cups, and you think about Lewandowski leading the competition in goals, and you got Klopp going back to his home country. That's going to be huge, and everyone in England will be rooting for Bayern Munich.
That coming up in 12 days, so in our next edition.
Well, we'll do that on the next time, yes.
Of Golazo Supremo. Mm-hmm. Before you give away all your good nuggets, because now I'm stealing Lewandowski and his scoring prowess in Europe.
The best Polish player since probably Boniak?
I was going to go with Lech Walesa, but I'm not sure if he had much of a left
Perestroika.
Yes.
How about Karol Wojtyła, former goalie, who went on to become Pope John Paul II.
I prefer the shallow end when it comes to Polish footballers, not out here with the big sharks are swimming. Golazo Supremo here, Rick Tittle.
Gotcha.
And Dan Dibley, as we break down the world of soccer.
And I have a messy story, too, I thought, because this is it's story time.
Should we go story time now?
You're in charge. I was just wondering. Because we're talking Champions League.
I was hoping to maybe tease the messy story because it's a great one.
All right. Coming up in 3 minutes.
That sounds about right.
Okay.
Probably more like six, but we'll say
coming
three.
Coming up in.
That way we'll hold them through the non-break.
It's the oldest trick in the book.
Keep them all strung out. Let's talk about this Premier League race, Rick, because it's gotten interesting. Liverpool had an opportunity to go up seven around Boxing Day and failed to do so. And now you look at the table. And it's Man City on top, flat on points, but goal differential favoring the citizens. And you look at the odds makers who are now favoring Man City as well. Is it over for Jurgen Klopp's side, or is this thing really up for grabs between the two and maybe even the three if you throw Tottenham in there?
Honestly, I don't even think it's up for grabs. I think this is Liverpool's. That was a little hiccup. They're going to be getting a lot healthy here lately. Tottenham is not going to win the league. It's never happened in my lifetime. They should really put everything they can into this last cup they're alive in, which is, of course, the biggest of all, the European Cup. I think Liverpool, listen, it's the Premier League, so you're never going to cruise to a title, but, I don't think Man City is ever going to get closer than 3 points. I don't even think it's going to get tied at any point. I think this is Liverpool's, and we're in February, so it might be a fool's errand when we have, 17, 18 games left. But I just think this is Liverpool's season.
Well, if you look at it, and Liverpool with a game in hand right now, so ostensibly, if this was bowling, they'd be up by 3 points because you assume the strike. Always, when you're doing bowling scoring, you assume that the pro would get the strike, and that's how they figure out plus 10, minus 10, etc.
Nice.
Liverpool still has a February 24th trip to Old Trafford to take on United. And as we've mentioned earlier, United, a rejuvenated side, a side that I don't believe has lost since the change at manager. So not an easy one for Liverpool, especially considering their form has been a little bit erratic over the past couple of fixtures.
The thing I love about the Premier League is you look down the fixtures and you'll see when you play Chelsea and Arsenal and Tottenham, Liverpool, Man United, you'll see those and think, uh-oh. But, I mean, look, you're going to be playing Bournemouth, or you're going to be playing Burnley, or you're going to, and you can't take your eyes off the prize. You'll be playing Cardiff City. That's the thing I love about this league, is you think, oh, we got five easy ones in a row, and then you find yourself down 1-0 praying for a draw in injury time. And that's the thing that I love about this league, sports in general, but especially about this fantastic league with just 20 teams.
March 16th, we do have the Manchester Derby, which is probably the second greatest, maybe the third greatest soccer rivalry currently right now. You'd have to go, obviously, Barcelona, Real, I think, and we'll get into the Copa del Rey and the draw on the first leg of that coming up. And if you really want to be off the beaten path, you might go, Boca Juniors, River Plate, as one of the all-time great rivalries. But I think this one, the Manchester Derby, has got to rank pretty close to the top.
It's huge, as is the Merseyside Derby, because you remember Goodison and Anfield are both in the same park Can we leave that?
I cannot. It's not, have, so basically, Golden Gate Park,
yeah.
You've got the soccer fields down at Lake Chalet,
right.
And if you threw a team at Sharon Meadow,
very nice.
They're basically that far apart, right? So one at Kezar, one at the Polo Fields.
You think about how in Italy everybody shares stadia, like the Stadio Olimpico, Roma Lazio, and they hate each other. The Stadio delle Alpi, which used to be Turin and Juventus. The Stadio Giuseppe Ferraris,
if
which
only people could
Sampdoria.
See how you did that. That was so beautiful.
Abbondanza, Chef Boyardee.
Fingers and thumbs together.
You have to. Prego, prego. Imbecile, testa di cazzo. But I think when I think about great rivalries, too, you mentioned some of the classics. The Old Firm. Because when you think about Rangers and Celtic, you're talking literally Protestants versus Catholics, which
yeah.
I think is the most harebrained, stupid thing ever, that if you're Catholic, you have to root for Celtic, and if you're Protestant, you have to root for Rangers.
Interesting, because I went...
Sectarian.
I went there probably about 15 years ago now, and I just randomly bought a jersey for my son, and we lean more toward Catholic than we do Protestant, although we are neither. And so looking back at it now, I actually made the right choice because I got him a Celtic jersey.
You got him the hoops?
Yeah.
Well, this is the thing for me. I remember thinking, this was years ago when Rangers were in Europe every year. I liked Glasgow Rangers. I never really liked Celtic. But think about Parkhead and Ibrox. But I thought, well, I'm Catholic, so I would have to root for the team I don't like. So it's just... Or else.
Your elevator's going down.
I'd have to go in there, and what are you? I'm a Calvinist. And like, okay, we'll let you live. It's kind of dumb.
So Manchester Derby, March 16th. Do you think that will have any ramifications on the title race? Or do you think at that point, Liverpool should be safe enough and clear to make that nothing more than just a good rivalry?
I don't think they'll be clear by then, but I think what Man United could do is kill off the citizens in that game.
That would be exciting.
The Sky Blues.
March 31st, you've got Liverpool hosting Spurs, which it would be great if Tottenham still was within, let's say, even 6 points at that point to where you get the three at Anfield and all of a sudden you're back in it. And if City's only sitting three back, that fixture March 31st could be true Premier League March Madness.
It could be, but I think there'd probably be a late Stan Collymore goal with Kevin Keegan. I would love it. I would absolutely love it if they win the league. It could be something like that. But we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. But yes,
These
are some of the fixtures that are going to be massive, once-in-a-lifetime things until Wednesday and then until Sunday.
Right.
This is what I love.
Right.
I love about this sport.
And it's the beauty because Liverpool could be clear by 9 on April 13th when they host Chelsea. And then just 1 week later, it's Tottenham at the Etihad to take on City. So in my dream scenario, and we got the Messi story coming up in just mere moments, but in my dream scenario, both of those matches would matter immensely for the title race.
I agree with you. And the other thing is, I just remember this. I was a guest on a show, a soccer radio show with two Liverpool fans, both from England. And they were asking me a lot of Tottenham questions, and they're asking me about Fernando Llorente. And I said, yeah, he's over the hill. He's stiff. He's pretty useless. Every once in a while, if you put it right on his head, he might score. And the guy came back with one of my favorite comments ever. No, the Scousers, so they talk like this. Everything ends in a question. And he's like, Fernando Llorente, he couldn't hit a cow's ass with a banjo.
With a banjo.
I just love the visual.
Throwing a banjo at a cow's ass.
Hitting a cow's ass with a banjo. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why we love them over there in Blighty, don't we?
We sure do.
Yes.
Well, Rick Tittle, we know, is a man of mystery. He's well-traveled, and he's seen the beautiful game in a variety of locales. But not only that, he has rubbed elbows, literally had his elbow bump another man's elbow at such great levels that we have to have him share the tales. You and Leo Messi, please.
All right, so this was, man, maybe 9-10 years ago, maybe. This is when Barcelona came to play at Candlestick Park in a friendly, and they brought Messi. And this was the day that they let this, it was a Mexican food company. They decided to let them deal with the tickets, and no one could get in even by halftime. It was a disaster.
My wife, by the way, was at this game with our eldest son, and was accused of cutting in line. The lines were unbelievable. They were hour-long, and people were downright going through revolution on the outside. The only time my son, Quest, by the way, ever went to Candlestick was for this game.
And he probably thinks, tear it down, and they did. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Quest.
So, anyway, a couple days before, they're staying at the Hotel Intercontinental on Howard, and they had a press conference. And it was with Pep Guardiola, who was the skipper, and Lionel Messi. And they brought all three cups. They had the Champions League trophy, they had the European Cup, they had the La Liga trophy, and they had the Copa del Rey, the King's Cup. All three cups right there. Not a lot of people at this press conference, but I asked Lionel Messi a question. And I said, now that Samuel Eto'o has left and Zlatan Ibrahimovic is coming in, how does this change your game, or does it? Now, as being a native Californian, I'm used to Mexican Spanish, right? El ganador este partido entre Dinamarca y Alemania juego Inglaterra, that type of thing.
Yeah.
Well, he's going to start speaking Argentine soccer. Of course, like the L's aren't like, you don't say Gallegos, you say Gallegos.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like,
mumbling.
I'm like, what? Like, I understand Casa de Pepe, donde está Casa
sure.
de Pepe. He's like, So I didn't even know what he said. But anyway, that wouldn't be worth the story there. Here's where the story begins.
Whew.
They said, everyone line up here for a parking pass. And I go, oh, I'm going to Candlestick. I'm going to need a parking pass. And I thought, I'll get it later. I go over to the elevator by myself. As the door is closing, Lionel Messi gets in with me. We're riding down the elevator. No bodyguards. We're riding down the elevator together.
6'3", Rick Tittle, 5'5", Leo Messi.
5'3".
Really?
He was a little teeny tiny guy. Yeah, exactly.
Which translates to what in Spanish? I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
Pulga.
Okay.
Alameda de las Pulgas.
Oh, wow.
Yes, the
Look
fleas. Yes.
Shout out San Mateo.
So we're riding down the elevator, and I'm thinking, this is really weird. So outside the Intercontinental Hotel, there are a million fans, mostly of Hispanic heritage. They love Barcelona, and of course they love Messi. So we walk out onto Howard Street. We start walking sort of towards, you know, the Metreon, like that way. Lionel and I, my buddy, we're walking side by side down the street. And now I have at least a little bit of a glimpse of what it's like to be a Hollywood star with people fawning over you.
Right.
Because there were at least 100 people running backwards with the biggest smiles on. They can't believe what they're seeing.
It's Rick Tittle, for God's sake.
So we're walking down the street, and people are thrusting things for him to sign, and he'll sign something. He'll put his hands in his pockets, look straight down, and keep walking, and then someone will put a ball in his face, and he'd sign it, and he'd try to ignore it. And these two women came up to me, and they said, "What on earth is going on?" And I said, "That's the most famous soccer player in the world." And they went, "Oh." And then, so he turned, we went about three blocks. He went one way. I went towards BART, towards Market. But all I could think of was he told his bodyguards, "Leave me alone. I need to get some air." And they're like, no, don't do it. Don't tell me what to do or whatever. Maybe it was just a glance that said that. And I rode the elevator down with him and I walked a couple of blocks. That was my brush with Leo Messi.
That's pretty cool because, like you say, you get a sense for that level of unbelievable celebrity, global celebrity, where people, it's not even like, oh, there's somebody famous, let me go over there and see if I can get a picture with them or whatever. It's, this person's going to be there, so I'm going to premeditatively plan my day around the possibility that he might be escorted by some random 6'4" radio host down the street, and I might be able
to
get
some...
Yeah, 6'5" by the time the podcast is over. But maybe I might get some sort of, you know, random brush with fame.
Right, and then he's right in front of your face. So that, I thought that was, that's my Leo Messi story.
That's a great story.
Thank you.
I enjoyed it. And it's seeing somebody of that magnitude. I saw Anna Kournikova back when she was at the peak of her powers, which included, I think, one WTA Tour victory, but that's neither here nor there. She was playing at the Bank of the West, and I was in a similar situation with her, and you could see people just like almost crashing their cars as they were driving down in Stanford, seeing her walk down the street. They couldn't believe it was like the reverse Medusa effect.
Once again, I'm going to ruin one of your stories because I'm going to one-up you on that.
You are kind of a one-upper. So you guys had
now
dinner
I'm
later
six
that night,
six.
Right?
No, I actually emceed an event that they had in Strawberry in Marin for her. And so she came on my show in person and then on the mic. And then she goes, "Hey, Rick, are you having fun?" And put her arm around me.
Oh, jeez.
I know. My friend was in the crowd and he was in love with her. And he said, "Seeing her touch you, that's all I need."
That,
and I went, no.
That's a little weird.
And he goes, "That's all I need." I'm like, dude, come on. Yeah. So say something else and then I'll one up that. I'll be Penelope Christian Wiig's character. My dad, he's the president of Mars.
Nice. I'll tee you up for some Wembley talk because okay. Tottenham has confirmed that the game against Arsenal, which I believe will come up Wednesday, the 13th, that game now also will be at Wembley because the new home at White Hart Lane, not yet done. Tell me about construction overrides and the disappointed Spurs fan base as they are relegated, quote unquote, to Wembley yet
Never
again.
Use the R word.
You're safe.
They should just, you know, say, look, it's not ready yet. I know they had a Super Bowl party there and people watched it on the big screens. Harry Kane, by the way, flew to Atlanta. He was in a luxury box there wearing his Tom Brady jersey. He's a huge New England fan. And I don't blame him. He's from old England, so he can root for New England. But listen, I remember the tragedy at Miller Park when the Brewers opened it and construction workers died. Let's just wait till it's ready. And the whole thing about maybe it's this week, maybe it's next week. We've been doing that almost for a year now as Tottenham fans. I just wish they would say, look, opening day next season, that's when it will be ready. If it's ready before that, but it's just almost like people are sort of getting in to let themselves down over and over again.
Yeah, and it's disappointing. You do want it open, but obviously you want safety to be at the forefront of whenever the White Hart Lane ground opens again. As we look at the Premier League standings, and we'll talk Copa del Rey and an interesting wrinkle in the Clásico. They'll play twice in 4 days coming up at the end of February, but Premier League at the bottom. You see Cardiff in the relegation zone, two behind Burnley. Fulham is 7 points away from being safe, and Huddersfield with 11 points. So are we going to miss out on some of the unique drama that comes with relegation or the fact that really there are, you know, you've got Palace with 26, Newcastle, Southampton, Burnley with 24, Cardiff 22, really five, and if you throw Brighton in there too, six teams trying to avoid one spot. Is there drama in that?
There's usually one team that's down by Christmas, and unfortunately it's the Terriers. Huddersfield is down. And then you get the drama. You know, and as you said, I mean, you can probably draw a line anywhere, maybe in the last 10. I mean, I know Everton fans who don't feel safe right now. It used to be once you got 40 points, you were safe. Now people say, I need 50 points before I can
feel
safe.
Well, only six teams have 40. The Wolves are seventh with 38, and you mentioned Everton with 33. They're ninth. They are 11 points clear with, you know, 12 fixtures left to go. You would figure that would be safe. But like you said, there's just an absolute mishmash of teams between Watford at 8th down to Cardiff at 18th.
It's a belief thing, too. I mean, a couple of years ago, Newcastle, who were already relegated on the last day of the season, beat Tottenham 5-1 because Tottenham were upset that they didn't get into the Champions League, and Newcastle's like, woohoo, we're in the Premier League one more day. It's kind of like a consolation game in a World Cup. I don't think these teams have the kind of quality. And it's mostly, you can say, you know, what's their, do they have that rapier point at the vanguard of their attack? It's mostly they bleed goals. How many goals do they ship a game? They ship like 3 goals a game. How are they possibly going to stay up?
Yeah, it's nearly impossible. And you look at League One, tell me if any of these teams strike your fancy. Luton with 65 points. They're 7 clear right now of Portsmouth. Barnsley with 59. So right now it would be Luton and Barnsley. I can't recall either team being in the Premier League of recent vintage.
Luton Town used to be in the top flight. When I was a fan, and I've actually been to Kenilworth Road in Luton. They used to have the plastic pitch, which we would call artificial turf.
They actually had a plastic pitch.
They had a plastic pitch. A lot of teams did. Kingsley Black was their star player. The Stanley Morecambe Stand, one of the most famous comedians in England. He was a huge Luton Town. They're called the Hatters because that's where they used to make the hats, Dan. It's been a while for Luton Town. I will say this for Luton Town glory. Sweden 92, and here you had France about to knock out Denmark, and it was Ebbe Sand, the Danish striker from Luton Town.
Wow.
Winning it at the end for the Danes. There's my Luton Town.
Well done. Yeah. Well done. Barnsley, as I mentioned, second, and the playoff right now would be Portsmouth, Sunderland looking for a return, Charlton and Peterborough.
Well, all those teams except the Posh have been in the top flight. Of course, Peterborough, the Posh, and Charlton Athletic, a London team. Who could forget Clive Mendonca's 5 goals at Highbury?
I never will.
Yes. Or I always like to call them, what did they call them in Monty Python? Charlton Heston Athletic. They used to do that too as a little joke. Who were the other teams you said there?
Also looking to go in Charlton, Sunderland, who was in the Premier League, I think, 3 or 4 seasons ago.
Yeah, I love that every team has 2 nicknames. They're the Mackhams, because we Mackham, you tack them, and they're also the Black Cats.
Oh, wow, the Black Cats. Blackpool Rovers, no, that's Blackburn Rovers. Yes. Blackpool is currently 8th, Coventry also in the middle. Mm. Wimbledon, down at the bottom, looking at relegation to League 2.
AFC Wimbledon, yes. Wimbledon is now MK Dons. But yes, that's the thing, too, about Blackpool. They, Sir Stanley Matthews, if you were in the 50s, Blackpool was the team. They, of course, are the seaside resort with the fake Eiffel Tower. And maybe 3 days a year, it's warm enough to swim.
Rick Tittle, Dan Dibley, it is Golazo Supremo. And we're bringing it to you, all of the soccer action from around the world. And we will get into some Major League Soccer as the season approaches. But Rick, Copa del Rey, you had a nice matchup there between Real Madrid, Barcelona, playing to a 1-1 draw. How much more motivated would Real be knowing that they pretty much have no chance in La Liga?
Well, it's a huge thing to lift your domestic cup. Your top, most just have one domestic cup, and the Copa del Rey is a, that'd be a huge thing. That's silverware. And now, if you think about the Galacticos and their Stadium of Light, I mean, you walk in and it's like the Versailles and the Hall of Mirrors with all their silverware. But the fact that you get that silverware at the expense of your bitter, bitter rivals. I mean, I think about the guys who have played for both teams, the Luis Figos and the Michael Laudrups. They used to say it was impossible to do that, but it is almost impossible, actually, to do that. I mean, you think about just the rivalry in Barcelona. Mauricio Pochettino, of course, who played for Espanyol, was the manager of Espanyol, said he would never even consider managing Barcelona. That, by the way, if you're in Barcelona, you're a Barcelona fan. And then if you're the working man, Espanyol.
Gotcha. Yeah. And the other side is Real Betis and Valencia. Of course, the second leg of these will be end of February. And as I mentioned, Real Madrid will host Barcelona. And then just 4 days later, they will play in La Liga in the true Clásico. So how might you imagine they set up each of those matches accordingly?
I think they go for it in both of those. Absolutely. At this point of the season, I think they go completely all out for it. It's a blood feud. Real Betis, by the way, a Basque team. Our old buddy Tab Ramos once played for Real Betis back in the day. Thought I'd throw that in. A little shout out to Tab, who is part of the United States national team setup.
Yeah, and the U.S. National team with a couple of nice wins here in friendly season. They look good down at Avaya. Mm-hmm. So something we can kick around next week. One more note here, Rick, before we step aside. The FA Cup. We had some interesting action as we get down, I believe, to the final 16 teams. And those matches will come up next week about this time. Any thoughts on that? Chelsea and Man U is probably the headline match coming up on February 18th.
I like that one because it, to me, and this is, you know, as a Tottenham fan, if they were in it, I would love it, obviously. But a Chelsea-Man U final is a snoozer just because it's just two big clubs. I like it when one of the minnows can find their way in there. And I love the fact that with Chelsea and Man United, one of those teams is going to get knocked out. So I like that.
Right now, you've got a grand total of 9 minnows, quote unquote, remaining. Of the 16, you've got QPR and Watford. Brighton takes on Minnow, Derby County. AFC Wimbledon against Millwall. You've got Newport County and Man City. Well, Man City's been laying waste to the competition in the FA Cup. Bristol City and Wolves. Doncaster Rovers and Crystal Palace.
Donnie.
The old Donnies.
You know what?
The Swans. My beloved Swans.
Yeah, you love them.
Going up against Brentford and then Chelsea Man U, as mentioned.
I always think of the Battle of Brentford, Boudica versus Claudius Caesar, don't you? Or you think about Brentwood out maybe by Antioch.
I think about Antioch first, but then I think about
OJ?
That battle. Caesar was like minus 700 in that one. That was a pretty big upset, as I recall.
Millwall, you know their nickname, Mill Brawl, at the old den.
Oh.
Because they're the Lions. So they played in the Lions' den. It's another London club like QPR, like you were mentioning. They used to be known for the worst of the hooligans. Casey Keller actually played at the old den when he first came over to England. But especially talk to a lot of Irish guys. If you're from Ireland, you're either a Liverpool fan because it's literally across the Irish Sea.
Right, right.
Or there's something about Millwall that really speaks to them. But their most famous players like Teddy Sheringham, Tony Cascarino, those guys, you basically go to a Millwall game to brawl. Mill Brawl. I actually walked by that stadium. Didn't go in.
No?
This is why I didn't get jacked up, probably.
Right. Didn't bring your boxing gloves that day. Probably a smart choice.
Didn't bring my chain mail.
Yeah. No, exactly. Mm. Or your lance or your sword, so to speak.
This is the thing I love, Dan, is that, you know, as Americans, you and I, we love American sports. But we have 32 football teams, right? Soccer teams, there's hundreds. And each one is like a sovereign state history book worth of... Great. I mean, and to this day, even though I've immersed myself in this since the 80s, every day I learn something new. It's the sport that never keeps educating or pulling surprises on us.
And then you educate me every time we do this podcast, Rick. So thank you and Godspeed.
And on that note, number 5 is in the books, Dan, as always.
Yes, I had a big send-off, but you stepped on it last week. So at this point, we'll just let silence be our goodbye.
This was a production of the 95.7 The Game Podcast Network.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.